You're quite quiet. Thanks, James.
Wow, wow, wow.
An early shot there for the XG.
Hello, welcome back to the Stadio Podcast and Ringer FC. I'm Musa Kwonga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
Doing all right.
Really?
Doing all right. Thanks. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Good program of football this weekend.
Not this weekend, Musa. It's Thursday.
This midweek. It's all the same in the lockdown.
There was a feast of football this week.
There was, yeah.
There's so much football. I kind of feel like mentally how my body would feel on like a normal Christmas afternoon.
That's interesting.
I don't know. I couldn't have any more. And we've not even really got to the best bit. This is what this week feels like in a way, because we're recording this ahead of Tottenham Liverpool,
right?
Which is probably the showpiece fixture of this midweek run of fixtures.
Very fair. Yep, it is.
So it's like, oh man, I'm so full. But
there's always room for it. Exactly. There's always room for that.
Is there?
There is. Yeah, in my experience.
Let's do some admin, because admin's fun and everyone loves it on this podcast.
Do they? Sorry.
Another thing that none of you asked for.
You're going to get it.
Righty's House this week was extremely wholesome. What is now being coined when you two get together and you two only as an uncle special.
Yeah. It's very big uncle energy.
Waxing lyrical about the youth of today. Exactly. In the words of White Mice. Big tune that, by the way. If anyone's a dancehall fan, killer 80s album from White Mice, Youth of Today on there is amazing. I think we might have played out on it once, Youth of Today.
Yeah, if we haven't, if you have, check the Stadio outros on Spotify. Should be there.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Look at that segue.
There we go.
Nice bit of admin.
Always on brand, strategic marketing.
Well, speaking of marketing, you've got a book out.
I do have a book out.
The first of the year. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
I managed to snag a pre-order of one of the limited screen printed covers, which I'm going to just keep for a couple of months and then flip on eBay.
Yeah, so what we did was the book, we did it. I've got a friend actually who he got really successful. I won't name him because he knows who he is. A friend of mine got really successful and he signed copies of his own books and then sold them on eBay.
Oh, devious.
I know. That is a true business mind.
I'm going to short the price of, in the end, it was all about love by Musa Kwonga. Until a load of people off book Reddit get after me and bankrupt me.
And each copy is worth 10,000 euro. Yeah, no, so just very quickly, just explain. So those who don't know, I wrote a book called In the End, It Was All About Love. It's very short, actually. It's 120 pages.
You're saying that love is short.
Well, in my experience. Oh my God. Oh my God. That is devastating.
Talk about an existential podcast.
Wow. Whew. Oh my God.
Musa getting more existential than Zlatan.
Oh my God. And that is saying something.
Actually, do you know what? He's someone who needs to read this book. He needs to read this book.
Listen, Zlatan needs to center himself again. Yeah. So shout out to Rough Trade Books who put this out for me. Just to very quickly just say, this book is basically for anyone who's ever moved country to start a new life somewhere. And I just want to shout out Rough Trade Books. They've had so much faith in me, and to Abby Fellows, my agent, who's really just pushed this through. It's been really emotional. So yeah, that's all the plugging I'll do. But
I'm so proud of you, because you got this is the first of three books. I might mute him, everyone, so he can't respond.
Oh, God.
Like I did on Twitter.
Oh God.
No.
It would make a lot of sense actually.
Had to mute your takes.
Oh God.
Self-care. Can't see these takes anymore. I've heard snippets of this book for a couple of years now from various readings that you've done.
Yeah.
And actually heard some of the chapters go through various refinements.
Yeah.
Tweaks. And I would say this if you weren't here as well. But the stuff that I've heard of it, you sent me a PDF and I said to you, do you mind if I don't read it and wait for the actual book to turn up? Because I'd actually quite like to turn the pages, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, of course. Yeah.
as excited as I am to read it, I kind of really wanted to just sit down with the book in my hands and read it, because the stuff that I've heard has been just really beautiful, to be honest. And oh God, I can't believe I'm giving this guy so much props.
Oh God,
in front of it. Oh, everyone's just like, oh God, guys, look. Why is this podcast so
existential?
But yeah, man, I'm just really hyped for you this year, because I know how much work has gone into the books that are coming out, especially the emotional energy that you've put into the one that's just come out. And one of them, the book about your time at Eton, I know how much that's taken out of you. And I know, obviously, that it came at a time when you'd written a couple of other things that didn't get picked up.
Yeah.
And then you've got the Write Your Book as well coming out. So I think, yeah, man, just in the words of Martin Tyler, drink it in.
Thanks, dude.
On to today's show. We're going to talk Premier League. We're going to talk record-breaking Chelsea in the Women's Super League. And we don't give flowers on this show because that is a writer's house thing. So we're going to give props. We do give props. And we do give a lot of shout outs. So we're going to be talking about Emma Hayes. We're also going to be talking about the Coppa Italia and the Coppa del Rey. Although, you know what I love about, I'm going to shout out the Spanish Football Podcast, Phil Kitchen-Melidis, Alex Kirkland, Sid Lowe.
They're amazing.
One of my favorite football podcasts.
This podcast.
I love that. Yeah. I love their hashtag when the Coppa del Rey is on from their account. It's Coppa del Yay. It's just so like, yay. Yeah, so we're going to be talking about that because there was some fun stuff midweek.
Can I just say, the Spanish Football Podcast, what's so amazing about them is when you listen to the podcast, you feel like you're visiting Spain.
Yeah, usually because they're doing it from Sid's car. or they're in a cab. Well, when the lockdown, when pre-corona, they do it a lot of times in cafes and stuff like that. So you just hear people like serving and like glasses clinking and coffee machines going in the background. I was just like, these guys are on location.
They're amazing, man. They're amazing. Yeah.
This is a long admin segment. So let's get into the football after this.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from sports exploration and green energy to delivering pizza and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 200, or 2 billion, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
Let's start with the Coppa Italia, because there was obviously a Derby della Madonnina. It's no longer known as that. It is now known as the Derby dello Stadio, because
yes,
it contained angry goals, existential reds, and all-round catfishery.
Yes, it did.
Obviously, Inter beating Milan 2-1 thanks to a penalty from Romelu Lukaku and a injury time free kick from Christian Eriksen, or 90th minute, let's say. After Zlatan Ibrahimovic had given Milan the lead after about half an hour and then proceeded to do his absolute best to feel something.
Yes.
The actual penalty itself was, this wasn't even angry, this was rage.
It was ferocious. It was like watching an alligator fight a python.
It was.
Zlatan Ibrahimovic and Romelu Lukaku really hate each other.
Yeah, that was very personal beef.
They hate each other to a level that it was actually uncomfortable. Anything intimate, right? Whether it's passionate in a good way or bad way, whether it's a couple having a tender embrace, or someone grieving, or two people arguing, two old friends arguing, or whatever, or two people that were friends that became adversaries. It's actually so, there are some things that are so intimate, you almost feel like you shouldn't be watching it. And the hate between those two is so pure and deep. And I guess the weird thing and the scary thing is that they obviously play together at United. So there's such a history there. For those who didn't catch the incident, for those few people who pay attention to football who didn't catch the incident, The two of them confronted each other throughout the first half. And then at the end, it looked as if they were actually physically. It's very rarely in football you think that two people are actually going to start attacking each other physically. But it looked like that was a possibility towards the end of the first half. And there was a reference that Zlatan made to, you know, going to your Vidu's stuff, your little donkey, referring to Lukaku's technique, but also referring to the fact that there was a story, a rumor about Romelu Lukaku consulting Vidu. Well, Vidu had told him to move to a certain club as opposed to another one. So there's a whole backstory there. There's a whole backstory.
Mm.
And what's quite sad about it is that Pogba came out in support of Zlatan online. And the reason that's sad is because Pogba and Lukaku were really close.
But so they fell out, didn't they?
Something's broken. Yeah, and you know, Pogba was integral in bringing Lukaku to Manchester United. So there's a real, it's really sort of sad to see people that were close, that were friendly, falling out to that degree. The thing about Zlatan though, I mean, what's more interesting is that this is a player that opened the scoring, returned from injury, leading Milan's title challenge, and actually jeopardized their chances of getting a trophy that was very winnable.
Yeah, and also, I mean, especially considering that they have started to stutter a little bit in the league.
Yeah.
And after looking like the only side that really had their shit together in Serie A, the closing pack are looking a little bit ominous.
And they really need him to be, yeah, they need him to be the guy. And the irony is, if you'd said at halftime, who's going to lose the plot here? A lot of people would have been like, oh, Lukaku's done. But experienced Zlatanologists would have told you that he was seeking something. He got his goal. He seemed to get the upper hand, but the petulance of that challenge that got him the yellow.
I mean, this is the thing, man. I mean, like, Zlatan he's kind of essentially had two careers. He's been playing professional football, but he's also been trying to simultaneously create his own myth.
Yeah.
The sad thing about Zlatan is that he never really needed to do that.
Never.
I think if he just focused on playing football and not constantly referring to himself in the third person, I think that actually he'd be held in much higher regard than he will be historically. I think should be. I think Zlatan is getting to a stage of his career now where, understandably, he's aware of his football immortality, probably for the first time.
Mm.
What I saw in this game was obviously someone who has a deep, two players who have a massive dislike for each other anyway.
Yeah,
but I think the way Zlatan was going on about it, and the thing that he said to Zapata at the weekend that you mentioned, where he said, "What did he say? I've scored more goals than you've played games."
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, for a guy who's 10 years his senior, I'm just not really sure what the point of saying something like that is. Deep down, I think he will be really pissed off at himself in that game because he essentially completely scuppered Milan's chances from a crap foul on a crap sack in yellow on Kolarov. This isn't a Zidane headbutt in a World Cup final.
No, and do you know what's really interesting about this moment? It's funny, the Zlatan thing, because his legacy is so interesting what it will be. And the scary thing for him is, it's harder now to name a defining goal than a defining quote for Zlatan.
Mm.
If you had to name his top five defining performances or goals, you're with Messi, you're like, what are his top five performances or goals? You can go like that. Lewandowski, you can go like that. Already you can do them, right? You can be like, Lewandowski, Real Madrid, the 4-1, Dortmund, the five goals against Wolfsburg in 9 minutes, you can get into that. Zlatan, if you say, okay, what is top five defining quotes or his top five defining goals, you can name the quotes faster than the goals, and that is a big problem for him. And, you know, I think he is definitely annoyed at himself. And you talk about the footballing mortality, it's no coincidence that the fallout with Lukaku comes with a player who replaced him when he was injured, and then when he came back from injury, didn't have the big comeback he was hoping.
Mm-hmm.
So you could argue that was the beginning of the kind of, I'm not sure that had happened before. I'm not sure Zlatan had ever come into a team before after an injury and there not been room for him. Obviously at Barca, there was the tactical shift with Messi, but that's Messi and, you know, Zlatan can accept that. But I think being replaced by someone who he regards as an inferior footballer was painful.
Mm.
And this is not, to be honest, this is not actually meant to be Zlatan bashing. This is more about this footballer has done things that we've never seen before, in some ways may never see again, if we're honest, because no one will manipulate the ball like that at that size, I think, really, maybe again for a few years. And who never really quite got... He never quite got the teams. There's a lot of criticism not in the Champions League, but neither did Brazilian Ronaldo. Zlatan really never quite got the teams, I think.
Apart from that, I think his first stint at Milan.
Or the first Inter team, maybe. The one that he left a year before, the one that he left... because the next year they got the treble. So he's always been on the verge of something, and I wonder if that bothers him. Because one thing I will say, when I was on Twitter and I talked about this sort of existential banter with Zapata, people replied, they're like, oh no, but like he's really smart. I said, no, it's not. It's like a 41-year-old man telling a 20-year-old that he's dunked more times. We're like, well, yeah, of course you've dunked more times. Great, great win. I got to say for Inter, because they needed that too. They really needed that win. Christian Eriksen needed that goal. Inter have, I mean, look, they're still doing well in the table. They're doing well in Serie A, but they did have a little bit of a form wobble. Not in terms of the results so much, but in terms of the performances and the fluency of the play. And it's quite ironic that they scored two goals from dead balls, from penalty to free kick, because they created so well in open play. And I must say, I really like that combination. It's interesting. In a time of like advanced tactical systems, it's really funny they've got an old school front two of Lautaro Martinez and Romelu Lukaku, who never get in each other's way. I really love it. When you watch them running and move, when they break, sometimes actually slightly too far apart, if I'm honest entirely, but they really spread the play really, really well.
Yeah, it's good, huh?
I'm always fascinated by someone who basically is that size, but actually doesn't dominate the box as much as he actually should. Like, it's really weird. Lukaku is like, pace and power. I'm like, yeah, but he doesn't actually use the power that much.
Oh, there was a great pace and power quote for someone the other day. I can't remember who it was. It was in the Premier League. It was a white guy. And I was just like, progress.
Oh my God, really?
Harvey Barnes, maybe?
That's a fair shout, actually.
Someone said pace and power. And I was just like, yes.
I do quite like the way that Michael Richards was like, I was pace and power. But then he followed up. He was like, but Yaya Touré wasn't. And he gets that the whole time. And he was a genius.
So Inter go through, as do Atalanta, who beat Lazio 3-2 in a bit of a thriller. There's another red in this game. Zapata missed a penalty. He could have sealed it with about 25 minutes to go.
The Atalanta central defence, there are certain times when I'm like, are you defenders or you just play the ball out from the back? Because almost they invited the Lazio forward through their area. It was really a strange thing. Sort of ushered him through. Great game that though, great game.
A heavily rotated Juve beat Spal 4-0. Can you imagine anyone more frustrated about anything than Cristiano Ronaldo not being on the pitch when his side gets awarded a penalty?
The only thing more frustrating than that is just Ronaldo watching that game in general, because there was so much space and Juventus were feeding. And you could see, it was funny because it was weird. Morata's body language. Like when he made his first attempt on goal, and I was like, whoa, he actually moves a bit like Ronaldo. Like the way.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. That's so weird, because I was going to raise that point. When he cuts inside from the left and then hits that shot from outside the box,
he moves like Ronaldo.
I was like, oh shit. Like, I didn't know Ronaldo was playing. And I was like, oh my God, it was Morata.
Yeah, it looked like him. Even the short back lift, like no preamble. 1-2 touch, cut inside, bang. And I'm like, oh. So what? He's obviously learned something, because the way that Morata moved in this game was very Ronaldo-esque. And the penalty was so assured.
Yeah, I mean, Rabiot went down for the penalty in such an elegant way that the ref booked him, because he couldn't believe that anyone could go down that wonderfully. And then it went to VAR and got overturned, and a penalty got awarded.
Here's a funny thing then. Is in the same way that João Felix learned a bit from Diego Costa, he clearly learned something.
Mm.
I wonder what Morata is taking from Ronaldo in terms of the finishing, the urgency, the decisiveness. I wonder, because he's going to be the guy, isn't he? And he's got
He looks happy there.
He's got Chiesa, he's got Kulusevski.
Dybala.
Yeah, Dybala as well, yeah.
And Cristiano Ronaldo, the options that they have at Juve are ludicrous. Right?
They should be out of sight, to be honest. They should be out of sight.
I mean, teething problems.
Yeah, true.
So we've got a Derby d'Italia semi-final.
Vibes.
Oh my.
Inject it.
That's going to be good. Let's quickly do Copa del Rey. Barca scraped through against Vallecano, and Messi did one thing in this, which was really funny.
Oh my God, yes.
Right. Do you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of playing five-a-side. It's really near the end. And you do that thing where you're like, you're on for a wonder goal, and then you scuff it. And he was giggling the whole way through. That was so funny. Like, I saw a Diana Christine tweet about it, and I wasn't watching the game live. And I was like, I wonder what she's referring to. Because it was just like, oh my God, Leo, lol. Or something like that. Yeah. And then I went, when I was watching it back, I was like, that's Diana's tweet. That's what Diana's tweet is about.
It's like watching it's the most dad I've ever seen him. It's like the most embarrassing dad I've ever seen Messi. Because the funny thing is, as the ball, as it cuts away, because no one's going to ask Messi to square it, right? You just let him do his thing. It's Messi, right? You don't, that's the thing. Whenever Messi messes up a dribble, doesn't score, if you go back and look at the highlight film, when Messi like goes past three men and hits it narrowly wide, if you go back even 5-10 years, it's very rarely you'll see someone who is standing square of Messi going, you just don't see it. Like the king, when the king is the claim, you don't interrupt the speech. This was so funny because...
So funny.
Even he knew. He knew.
His reaction was really funny, I thought. But the two goals that Barca scored were really lovely. Both kind of, not identical, but they're very similar, just like square balls, tap-ins.
I got to say this, Ryan, and it sounds a bit harsh. Can people stop acting like Frankie de Jong has started playing, just started playing football? Because
yeah, like he's a bus, like he's a 17-year-old La Masia graduate.
I don't want to, but I just saw a couple of tweets yesterday. It's like, people are talking like Frankie de Jong was plucked, was found, you know, they're talking like he was found wrapped in swaddling clothes in a fishing boat off the coast of Barcelona and brought in and like, oh, look at this young boy, Frankie. I'm like, no, Frankie de Jong is legit and was running European football. He was very, very happy doing his thing at Ajax.
He's dominated Real Madrid at the Bernabeu more recently than Barcelona have.
Absolutely, he has. And I just got a bit, I noticed a lot on Barcelona Twitter. And look, it's not just Twitter, because a lot of those tweeters are matchgoers, right? So they go and watch Barcelona. They have season tickets. My concern was always that, like, if you didn't watch that much of Frenkie de Jong before Barcelona and he arrives at Barcelona, and when you're a fan of any big club, there is a tendency almost to be like, okay, now they're here, now the real football begins. No, it already began. And sometimes the club is so dysfunctional, the player that you brought in cannot function to their level. The club was utterly dysfunctional. Barcelona was utterly dysfunctional. We've discussed this 1,000 times.
I mean, I wouldn't say that in past tense, honestly.
Well, yeah, it was and it is. And the fact that he is producing brilliant performances in advanced position is a bonus.
I agree. They got a bit of a scare. Vallecano took the lead.
Yeah.
A major beef with this game. Why did Barcelona not play in their home kit? They didn't need to play in pink. Made it more difficult for everyone. I'm all for pink kits. However, Barcelona could have played in their home kit and it would have been fine and much easier to watch. Other games in the Copa del Rey. Real Betis 3, Real Sociedad 1. This game was kind of wild and extremely difficult to watch because it was very, very foggy at the Villa Marín. Ilyar Mendy got sent off just after halftime for Real Sociedad, which kind of changed the game because they were 1-0 up at that point. Oyarzabal scored a lovely goal to begin with. Sanabria got sent off for Betis, and then Canales scored again not long after.
He's on hot streak.
Yeah, he really is. The game went to extra time, and then two goals for Iglesias in extra time sealed it for Betis. Another Joaquin assist. He came off the bench 67th minute. So like I said before,
almost got a late winner as well.
Like I say, like you want to just catch the Joaquin highlights, just switch on 65 minutes and you'll get him. Like clockwork, man. It's like clockwork, honestly.
It's incredible advice.
Yeah. Villarreal went through over, beat Girona 1-0, Levante beat Valladolid, and Almeria beat Osasuna. Sevilla went through 3-0 over Valencia and scored an absolute wonder goal for Luke Dion's second. If you haven't seen it, go and dig it out. Watch the whole thing. The way they play it around at the back and then break is unbelievable.
It's actually incredible. I've never seen anything like that before. I've never seen the ball be circled. Well, but circled. Because Ryan, look, with the way that goal begins is with goalkeeper basically plays it to the left wing and the header that keeps it in and then rotate. I've never seen that. I've never seen that desperation to recycle the ball like that. When I first saw the goal, when I first saw it, I thought Sevilla were attacking the goal they received the ball from. Because they attack, because the ball comes out and the guy heads back down the line and then it gets hammered across the box. And I'm like, they attack their own goal with the intensity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's incredible.
Shouts to Jess Malone, Soccer Sabbatical. I still don't think she's got over that. She just tweeted us saying, how? All right, I think that's good for the Coppa Italia and Coppa del Rey. We'll take a break and then we'll come back and do Premier League.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else. This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower what's next. Start today at Empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.
All right, man. Where do you want to begin in the Premier League?
We have to begin with Manchester United, Sheffield United, I think.
Okay.
Just because in terms of the fixture, top versus bottom.
Sheffield United's first win on the road this season.
Sheffield United beating Manchester United 2-1. It was funny in a way. It was maybe nostalgic for the old days. This was like old United. This is the kind of game, weirdly enough, that in the good old days, United would make very, very heavy weather of. They would lose an eminently winnable game or struggle. Actually, no, to be honest, the old United would have struggled and come back to win. And there was a really strange thing because, you know, Sheffield United won 2-1. There was a weird moment where once United equalised, Sheffield United looked as if they had no more goals in them. Mm. And once they scored, United looked as if they had no more goals in them. It was really strange. And while this victory will be put down to defensive errors to a certain extent, there was a moment, I mean, between De Gea and Maguire, the failure or the refusal to clear the ball was utterly baffling, Ryan. It was so strange.
The second goal?
Oh my goodness. It was.
Well, I tweeted that they looked like table football defenders.
No one took responsibility. It was so strange. No one just slashed the ball clear. It was so bizarre.
The De Gea one was, I think, because the Twanzebe one was a little bit like,
Right.
But I think the De Gea one was the criminal one. That should have just gone out
of stands.
Yeah.
What I will say with De Gea is he's not that comfortable with his feet. Well, not as comfortable. By the standards of the modern sweeper keeper, he's not at all as comfortable with his feet. And because I think the game has changed quite rapidly in that regard,
Yeah. There's
more space to command. And I think he's been isolated more and more over time. And this goal was also almost a microcosm of that. A footballer, a goalkeeper who's comfortable with the ball at his feet will just put that into orbit.
I mean, they still got quite unlucky, I thought, Man United. I think that, you know, taking the deflection, hitting the bar and going in. Yeah, the defending was poor and they kind of invited it on themselves, but still a lot of the time that doesn't happen. And the first goal, I think, was... I mean, they were making a big deal about it on Match of the Day and I wasn't 100% in agreement. I think that Ollie said that the referee got both decisions wrong. So disallowing Manchester United's goal and giving Sheffield United's goal. And I actually thought both of them were pretty similar. So one of them was wrong. That makes sense.
Yeah. And I think also, I think one of them was wrong, but
I think the Manchester United disallowed goal was softer. So I do think Manchester United had a bit of rotten luck there. But I also think that this isn't really much to panic about. And I don't want to kind of sound contrarian or anything like that. But I think that was this Manchester United's first defeat in 13 games, I believe, in the league.
Yeah, it's been a while since they lost one.
I think this just kind of happens. It's one of those. It's like, I know this might sound like playing it down and, you know, nothing really matters and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, there are probably some things there that Solskjaer's really angry about and he'll pull everyone up on in training. But I also think that after such a, you know, playing Liverpool back to back, rotating and playing the bottom of the league, sometimes this happens. You can see, and we'll talk about a difference in intensity in a moment when we talk about Chelsea. Which actually didn't end in a massively positive result for them. But still, I thought United lacked a bit of intensity and were kind of just waiting for things to happen.
Mm.
And were a little bit wasteful with their finishing. I mean, for example, Rashford had that one really early on from the edge of the box, which I thought he should have hit the target with. You know, there was when he was shaping to shoot for that, even though it wasn't too close, you were kind of expecting that to go in the bottom corner, really.
Mm. Yes, yes.
Yeah, maybe United could have created a little bit more, but I think Sheffield United, and something will come on with Wolves in a minute, because sometimes in games like this, as poor as the opposition may be on paper in terms of table position, Chris Wilder made a point after the game that a lot of Sheffield United's games this season, even though they're on course for like the worst record in Premier League history, they've been quite tight.
Yeah.
They've been fine margins. And I don't think that these are a side who, for example, like Manchester United away, they can really make it difficult. I think even though they're struggling this season, I think it's easy to forget how impressive they were last season.
Yeah.
And that doesn't evaporate overnight, I don't think.
They've lost the tiny margins. That's what's happened. The only thing is, they've lost the tiny margins that they had last year.
Mm.
And that's the only difference. And I would say with United, their struggles at the number nine position have to be talked about a little bit. The fact that Cavani has come in and been a revelation, even in his, you know, to the autumn of his career, really shows how much they need that nine to knit front line together. Because now we've established that Rashford is actually better as a kind of roving forward. And that, I think he's best at that. Greenwood has a while until he becomes a nine. And I'm not sure if he will evolve into that just yet. United do need a traditional nine, I think, to knit all that together. And it's not Anthony Martial. I think for when United go shopping in the summer or the summer after, it's important for them to bear that in mind. Because, you know, Martial has great, he's a great asset to United, but I don't think necessarily in the central spot. But anyway.
We had a question from Max on Twitter, Max MDM. It's been a tough season to be a Blade. Can you just say a few nice things after tonight's performance? Like I said before, like I do think that they defended really well, Sheffield United. There were a couple of chances with smarter decisions in terms of movement, holding a run for a split second more or bending a run. They could have been in.
Yeah.
I mean, they were ahead slightly on expected goals, which I think gives you some kind of perspective in terms of like how little Manchester United created in terms of any glaring opportunities.
Mm.
It has been a really tough season for Sheffield United, especially after how positive last season was when they came up and how much trouble they caused some really, really good football teams last season.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I really like Chris Wilder as well. And I think he's a really good coach. I think the season has been tricky. I think it's a tricky season for everyone, to be honest. And I think that I'm not talking about asterisking anything, but I do wonder what the Premier League table would look like if everything had been normal this year. I don't think it looks the same at all.
No, I don't think so.
Props to the Blades. It's nice to win some football matches, isn't it?
It's the first win at Old Trafford since the 70s.
Really?
Sheffield United beat Manchester United at Old Trafford the first time since 1973.
Wow.
47 years.
I mean, to give you some perspective, Moussa Okwonga has never seen Sheffield United beat Manchester United in the league at Old Trafford in his lifetime.
Oh my goodness. That's how old I am. Oh my goodness.
Hey, you've had lots of lovely things said about you this week. I've got to readdress the balance.
You do. When Sheffield United last beat Manchester United at Old Trafford, Idi Amin was still 3 years away from chasing my parents out of Uganda.
I never want to big ourselves up here, but find me another podcast that will do that reference. And be allowed to get away with it.
Yeah, that is... Wow.
You are, wow.
Ridiculous. It's real talk.
I would say hiding in plain sight, but I'm not so sure anymore. Where would you like to go next? Should we talk about Chelsea?
Yeah, Chelsea.
All right, so we had a few questions about Chelsea. One from Kellen McMahon. Can you all just speak on Tuchel's first game at Chelsea? Matthew Golder, is the 820 passes completed by Chelsea, brackets, the most by a club in the Premier League this season, a good sign or a bad sign for the rest of the season? Rory Salliger, how do you feel about the new gaffer, Tommy T, at Chelsea? I think that this was actually quite impressive. In this TED talk, I will lay out the reasons why.
Yeah.
Let's take a walk, everyone. So.
There he is.
I don't want to re-explain anything here because obviously the level of football I've played at is not that high comparatively. A couple of years ago, we had a couple of coaches who have now gone on to, one's at PSG and one's at Werder Bremen. And we were doing these intense passing drills for 30 minutes in a half. So it would be full formation as if you were like midfield and strikers against a full defense and central midfield setup. And the mental exhaustion that you would have to go through to play that relentlessly for that amount of time, knowing that you may not get a chance for 3 or 4 minutes, or because this defense is set up legit. It was pretty intense. And this is what I found really impressive about this Chelsea thing, is that they had a dip towards the latter stages of the first half where they kind of got a bit passive. But then you could see the impact that Tuchel had on them at halftime, because when they came out again in the second half, the ball movement and the passing and the intensity of the passing was relentless. And I was really, really impressed with it. Which was a shame, because then Martin Keown and Dion Dublin completely just pissed all over that on Match of the Day, saying that they were super bored, which I actually massively disagree with. And I'm not going to lie, it did give me a little bit of... because I tweeted about this during the game, it was kind of mesmerizing, the intensity of Chelsea's passing. And it did give me a little bit of a, I'm not seeing this massively wrongly when Tuchel came out afterwards and praised the intensity.
Right.
Now, you could see, just to caveat that, you could also see how difficult they found it to create really good opportunities or work. It was like that final stage of the patterns of play they found tricky to work. But the guys had one training session.
That's what's scary about it.
Yeah, and scary. Also, like I was saying with the Sheffield United victory over Manchester United, they're playing Wolves. Wolves who were set up incredibly well.
Yes.
And therefore, it is kind of like a training drill when you think about it. When you have two opposing strategies in a game like that, I think it is very easy to see a 0-0 draw as a massive failure there, when actually I think that what you have is a really, really impressive attacking performance apart from that final thing. Bear in mind, Kai Havertz had a header right at the very end, which was goal-bound. A defender was in the way. And you have a Wolves side who defended incredibly well all game. And I think both sides came out of this, or should come out of this, with a lot of credit. And this is the thing I think about Tuchel. I also think that there was a lot of talk about Ziyech as a 10 doesn't work. Him and Havertz, I think, were kind of playing as 2-8s, really. They were playing as 2-8s ahead of 2-6s.
Which in a dynamic team is really effective, I think.
You could say 10s, maybe. 10s, 8s, they're kind of interchangeable. I think that they were playing as the two advanced central midfielders slightly inside.
Tucked in, yeah.
I think Ziyech worked in that position, actually.
I'm really excited to see what Tuchel does with Kovacic, because Kovacic is a player who I've long looked at and been like, there is someone who, if you get 20% more out of him, the entire team just elevates.
Mm. If I was a Chelsea fan, I'd be looking at... I don't know. I didn't get the stick about Ziyech as a 10 or Kovacic and Jorginho combining for 80 passes out of Chelsea's 820. I think that...
I'm not a Chelsea fan and I'm excited for Chelsea.
As an opposition fan, I'm genuinely quite concerned about the potential of this side. And this isn't me just getting hyped about one performance. This is me kind of seeing how Tuchel can turbocharge teams.
Yeah. I think he kind of liked that 0-0 result.
Me too.
I think he liked it. I think 4-0, I think if they'd blown Wolves away, then the same people in the studio would have got overhyped and Tuchel would have thought, you're looking at the wrong things.
Yeah.
Tuchel would rather take a 0-0 where they played like that than a 4-0 where two shots and 20 yards went in and they got a penalty. Because this reminds me, and this is sounding like this is a real hot take, but here we go. Would be my first hot take on this episode. But when Pep went to Barca, they had a couple of stumbles. The first two games, I think they had a draw and a loss.
Yep.
And
Cruyff.
They were like Cruyff's opinion piece. And Cruyff was like, this is the best Barcelona I've seen in a long time. And watching Chelsea, the fluidity of all those players that attack, actually Tuchel was tailor-made for this. And the question I have really is, how long ago did Tuchel have a rough idea of the squad he wanted to use in his first game? Or the formation? Because I know it was one training session, but he clearly came with a clear idea. He's clearly been studying those players for a long time, aware of the capabilities. I'm fascinated, I suppose, by the forward line. He started with Giroud, and Giroud is off this incredible pivot amid the speed. I wonder if he goes at some point completely amorphous and goes with Timo Werner at the peak and then just keeps it fluid and says, Timo, you're the 9, and I want you to occupy the 9 space for the bulk of your play, but also want to drop wide and back. Because I think at Chelsea, the kind of team where you can imagine, and this is the thing as well, the love for Hudson-Odoi. You can imagine.
I thought he would, you know.
Listen, the Germans know a piece of advanced technology when they see it. Callum Hudson-Odoi is a supreme, supreme piece of technology. He is. Was it Tuchel who said with Rashford, you don't understand what you've got with Rashford.
Yep.
There's a particular class of pundits who are not aware of the potential of English players. I do believe that, Ryan. I really think there's a particular class of English. I'm not going to name names, but there are some pundits who aren't aware of the class of their own players or what they're capable of. And sometimes it takes fresh ideas from outside to be like, oh, that guy can actually do that.
I agree.
I really believe that. Like, anyway, sorry to... God, I'm quite spiky today.
Yeah, I think it's one of those. I think that a Chelsea and England legend has lost their job as the Chelsea manager, been replaced with a hype manager from the continent. The narrative is there, you know, Tuchel's kind of up against it. And to be honest, but the thing is with Tuchel, he won't give a shit.
No.
He will not give a single shit what anyone says about it until he does at one point and then he snaps. I mean, whatever happens, it's going to be fun for a while. Let's quickly move on to Manchester City. Manchester City beat West Brom 5-0. Sam Allardyce is an absolute genius and I've just beaten him 5-0.
Yes, yes, yes. Myth building. Eddie Howe was the same thing. He did with Eddie Howe at Bournemouth. Oh, Eddie Howe's a genius. Eddie Howe's a genius. Eddie Howe's a genius. And they just destroyed them 4-0. Yeah, I've seen this before. We know this is what Pep does. He's brilliant at that.
They absolutely demolished West Brom. So I texted you, didn't I, during the game? Was it during the game or after the game?
Afterwards.
Saying, is there a case to be made that Gundogan is currently the best 9 and 8 in the Premier League?
Yes. And I was like, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely agree. He is.
I kind of said that a bit tongue-in-cheek, but like the position that he took up for his second goal, was it?
Yeah.
I think it was basically Aguero.
Right.
It's really weird. This is a deep-lying midfielder who has played deep-lying midfielder his entire career. And all of a sudden, he's the furthest man forward on the edge of the box of making movements like Aguero. It was like watching Aguero. It was super weird. You know, like we were saying about Morata, like watching Ronaldo before. It was like watching Aguero.
Gundogan is... It's just the only thing that's ever stopped Gundogan is injury. Only he is like on his day. The only other player, it's funny because, you know, City have them both. In terms of a unique game-breaking talent, there's very few, there's like five players in the league of Gundogan. And it's just because he's injured so much, people don't see it. But that is a player who can raise the game to a tempo and a level that almost no one else can match. But Gundogan is a player who, in the very final stages of the Champions League, can dance to a crowded midfield like it's nothing.
He's so good, man.
He's so good.
He's so good. That is 11 wins in a row in all competitions for Manchester City.
Goodness.
They've got Sheffield United at home next on the weekend. Mm. They're starting to look a bit like...
ominous.
Inevitable. Who knows of the season, man? It's a big catfish season, so...
Yeah.
We did have a question about Manchester City. Yeah, one from John Squires quickly. He just said, will Manchester City be okay without a recognised number 9? I think, they will. I think because the thing is, like, look how they're coping without De Bruyne.
Right.
And then they've got De Bruyne to come back in. They've got players to come back in and to play at the 9 if they need it. This is the most similar Pep side. I think you mentioned it, actually, so sorry if I've nicked this off you.
Right.
About this being more reminiscent of Pep's early Barcelona stuff than any other side he's managed since. Because it is really like... when he moved Messi and all of the defenders were like, who do I mark?
Yeah. When he turned De Bruyne into a false 9, it was simultaneously terrifying and also like, oh, why hasn't this happened before? Mm. And he must have been, when he came up with it, you know, they're down in his basement wherever he comes up with these supervillain schemes. You could tell there's a moment Pep must have been like, why didn't I do this ages ago?
Mm.
It's unreal. Actually.
It is unreal. Props to Mikel Arteta and Arsenal. They played really well against Southampton. That's a tricky place for Arsenal to go. They've not done particularly well at Southampton and they've not done particularly well against Ralph Hasenhüttl. But I want to shout out Bukayo Saka because he's been unbelievable again. And Sana Qureshi wrote an amazing tweet saying, did Saka start his knee slide before the ball hit the back of the net?
I had to read, you know what's so funny? I actually had to rewatch it. I don't think he doesn't quite.
No, he didn't. She was being a little bit tongue in cheek, but I was just like, it wasn't long after.
Yeah, I had to rewatch it 3 times. There's a lot of, you know, sometimes in football, there's these things where you have to watch, you have to have peripheral vision.
Yeah, really good win for Arsenal. Good run of form at the moment. Manchester United at home on Saturday. we'll see. I mean, that could, no result will surprise me in that game, I don't think. Apart from maybe 0-0, actually. Mm. We need to give West Ham some props because West Ham are playing really well and actually moved into the Champions League spots for a time this week. 3-2 win over Crystal Palace at Selhurst Park. David Moyes is doing some really good stuff.
Moyes at West Ham and Ancelotti at Everton are just two absolutely
like hands in gloves.
They're perfect managerial fits.
Yeah, true. And I want to big up Thomas Suchek.
Yep, has strong.
He's had a really impressive season. And West Ham have actually scouted pretty well over the last couple of years, apart from the odd mishit.
I don't think Haller was a bad signing. It didn't work out. I think he was a really good player with a skill set, but didn't work out.
Yeah, but also you saw how much a lot of that Eintracht front three struggled when they moved.
Yeah, yeah.
The only one who's had anywhere near the level of, you could say, success has been Rebic.
Yeah, Rebic has really, he's really brought quite a bit of his form to the new place. Yeah.
Quick shout for Everton, Leicester. This was a really fun game. Tielemans' goal was credited to Yuri Tielemans, but this was a big collaborative effort. This is like one of those tracks that's on a hip-hop album featuring five legendary MCs, but just because someone's like, I want that for my album, they get credited with the artist title for it. it was technically a Tielemans goal, but it was featuring about four other players.
How late did Pickford see it? That's the question.
I mean, Pickford could have stayed upright and moved his foot very slightly and probably saved it.
All I will say is he did a lot of work getting up to get down. It was like, watch one of those break dancers limber up at the side of the floor and they come, they throw in a move, but the move isn't that good.
Pickford's just singing Billy Ocean in his head. One of the nights, one of the nights you feel like getting down.
sorry, you throw me off. And if James Rodriguez listens to this podcast, which he doesn't, he'll be like, what about my goal? And actually, James's goal was stunning.
It was lovely, actually. And do you know what, though? It was one of those where, do you remember the Benrahma thing for Brentford? When he had that terrible control and then megged someone and then hit it in the corner.
Oh, right. Yes. Well, I don't think this was like that because he...
Yeah, it was. But he played that dreadful pass before that got cut out and then it came back to him.
Okay, when it came back to him, because what I love is the way he beats his man on his left foot is unreal. Mm. The hesitation dribble is incredible. Like, if you get a chance to watch this goal again, the way James beats his marker to give him space to shoot is unbelievable. And then he cuts the ball inside and then just like hammers it with his right foot, which, you know, he's a lefty. Hammers it with his right foot from 25 yards in off the post. Just to say very quickly that it's so strange that at the time when Zidane needs a player exactly like James Rodriguez, James is loving it life at Everton.
Yeah, I mean, Zidane could also do that with a player like Martin Odegaard, who is going to be at Arsenal. Before we wrap up the Premier League, we need to talk about Burnley Villa because this was an absolute cracking game. And actually, we need to give props to Leeds as well, being Newcastle 2-1 at St. James's Park with just a really wholesome embrace at the end of the Newcastle-Leeds game. It was so beautiful. There's something about the way that Bielsa greets fellow managers. It's really endearing. I don't know. I would love to have known what he said to Steve Bruce. He was probably like, this is just what I imagine someone like Bielsa would say to someone like Steve Bruce in this scenario, especially with what Newcastle have been going through and what Steve Bruce has been going through. I imagine he's probably said, don't listen to what they're saying. I watch your games. I know what you're trying to do. And I believe in you, or something like that.
God, you made me emotional there.
Bielsa's probably seen something in Steve Bruce or what Steve Bruce is trying to do, or he's probably likened the scenario that he has been in his career to what Steve Bruce is going through. And I imagine it was something like really sympathetic and really encouraging to Steve Bruce. I imagine.
Do you know what? That's really beautiful, Ryan, because I mean, I'm quite emotional about that because I remember interviewing a manager years ago about competition between managers. And I was like, isn't it kind of like a fellowship? Isn't it? Because, oh, well, people are out for themselves. And I was like, but actually I've always believed there is a kind of like, There's a bond there. When you see Bielsa being spoken about, when he talks to others, you're like, it's like they're all architects. It's like, you know, you're all architects working on your little different city plans. And you know it's tough because very few people can be architects because it requires so many skills and it's really lonely at the top. And just having someone going, you know what? That's a nice cathedral you got over there. That's a nice building there. Keep on with it. I can imagine him doing that.
Final shout, Burnley 3, Villa 2 in what was a wild game of football. And I love games like this afterwards where Sean Dyche is interviewed and he looks so proud. There's nothing that Sean Dyche enjoys more, I think, than kind of putting one over on a team that everyone has a soft spot for. Like, he would have loved beating Liverpool because it ended that massive unbeaten run.
Mm. I think Sean Dyche enjoys more approval than he thinks. And the reason I say that is because if you look at Ben Mee, the way that Ben Mee came out, Black Lives Matter, and was incredible in relation to Black Lives Matter. That comes from the club, that ethos, that support to speak out that freely, to feel empowered to speak like that. You don't speak that freely as a footballer if you don't feel that it's a club that doesn't empower to do so. Mm. So there's huge credit. And actually, weird enough, I don't think Dyche got enough credit for creating an atmosphere where Ben Mee could come and speak like that, because it was one of the defining features. Very few white players actually came out immediately after Black Lives Matter and were like, not that they were not supportive, don't get me wrong, but very few came out with that vocal to that extent.
And that articulate, yeah.
So, you know, to me, I will always rate Ben Mee for that. And I'll always rate Sean Dyche for creating an atmosphere where players could speak like that. That's a huge deal. So Burnley beating Villa 3-2, what I love about this result for them is that when they step back from COVID and the season this has been, to beat this Liverpool team and this Villa team back-to-back, just unbelievable validation for Burnley fans. I mean, I don't know the last time Burnley were this good. I mean, obviously, sort of decades ago in terms of this level.
But I mean, also remember they stuck three past Fulham, who have been defended really well at the weekend in the FA Cup.
Yeah,
these two really impressive results have had another tidy result in the middle as the filling to the sandwich.
I'm really made up for them, actually. Really chuffed for them.
Chelsea beat Villa 4-0 in the Women's Super League midweek, and it was a pivotal game for more than one reason. First of all, it was one of Chelsea's games in hand over Manchester United.
Yeah.
Took them back to the top of the league, level on points. They're top on goal difference. They have a game in hand over Manchester United. The next side that they have played the same amount of games as is Manchester City, 5 points behind them. But it also was a Women's Super League record for an unbeaten run. They are 32 games unbeaten in the Women's Super League. As Tim Stillman rightly pointed out on Twitter, they still have a way to go to match Arsenal's, well, back when they were Arsenal ladies. Arsenal's 108 game unbeaten, top flight unbeaten streak, because obviously that was when it transitioned through various competitions. But the thing to point out here is that Emma Hayes spent 2 years as assistant at Arsenal during that run as well. But it's a really amazing achievement, especially over the last couple of years where the strength of the top sides in the Women's Super League has, I mean, there have been various threats to Chelsea. The fact that they haven't lost a game is frankly kind of wild. I mean, you look at the progress of Manchester United this season, you look how much money and investment Manchester City have made over the last few years, how strong Arsenal have been. It's an amazing achievement from Emma Hayes. Not that she needs any more props, because she's an absolute don. But I mean, she will not care what the hell we say about her. She'll be like, yeah, all right, you know.
She won't care, but what I'll say is this. An Emma Hayes in charge of that England talent.
Oh, good Lord.
Would have been a big problem at the World Cup. And actually, it's going to go back. Is a historical failure not to have her in charge of that. I'm sorry, but not to have Emma Hayes in charge of that talent, I think will go down as historical failure, in my opinion. But what she's done at Chelsea, what terrifies me about this game is a microcosm of what Chelsea have done. So the first three scorers, Kerr, England, and Harder.
That's very frightening.
It's very frightening because they've got them working in concert now. Along with Drew Wright, and that's the front four. They're playing this like 4-2-3-1. And my one thing was, the only thing that will save other teams in the Women's Super League this year is if they don't manage to incorporate those players all in the same team. But they've done it. Mm. And that's scary. That's scary for Women's Super League, but also for the Champions League. It's scary for Europe, because over the next couple of years, 2 to 3 years, I do expect to see them emerging as a European force.
I think a really good sign at how, or an example, or I don't know, evidence or whatever. I'm not sure if it's evidence or what, because it's not like discourse really kind of proves or disproves anything. But I think that she's doing such a good job at Chelsea and she's held in such high regard. Mm. There was an amazing Katie Wyatt piece for The Athletic a few days ago where she wrote about Emma Hayes, actually. And there was a line in there that she wrote where it was like, she referred to, a piece on The Athletic about Frank Lampard, and the comments were talking about who would become the next Chelsea manager. Apparently, she's in the piece, she said only one user threw in Thomas Tuchel. but far more suggested Emma Hayes.
Respect.
And there was, a line from the piece said to read Hayes's name in that context is no longer surprising. The piece is really interesting. I'd go and read it because it's about basically whether she would cross over and manage a men's team. Now, we have no doubt whatsoever that she has the ability to do that and she's more than qualified to do so. But there's a really interesting thing in there where it's like, would you risk that level of pressure when you're kind of going through to create a dynasty where you are? Why would she want to cross over to the men's game? Why do it? Because, I mean, this isn't a conversation I don't think we need to have now because we know the answers. But I think that my personal opinion is she's more than qualified to manage any top flight men's club, I believe. Does she need to do it? No. Would she want to do it? Probably not necessarily.
And the level Chelsea, what they're building at Chelsea is truly exciting.
I mean, they've stuck, but it's really, really interesting the difference in time, if you like, that, and obviously we know the reasons why potentially, but you know, this is, I think, her ninth season at Chelsea now. When was the last time a Chelsea manager got 9 seasons for the men's team?
Yeah.
So I just, absolute props to Emma Hayes. I mean, we've run out of words to describe how, in the level of high regard that we hold her, because she's just, I mean, she's a fucking don. Nomination for our coach of the year.
Yeah.
If Hansi hadn't done what he'd done, I think Emma Hayes would have won it. And obviously that's the award that she would have really wanted to win this season.
Yeah. The way she outthought City and Arsenal last year, and those are two serious, serious teams. Like, and she
already has done this season. And add to that Casey Stoney as well, who has proved herself to be a massively astute coach. Like,
yeah.
The problems are increasing in the Women's Super League, and Emma Hayes has an answer to all of them so far.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yes, this Chelsea squad is stacked, but still.
So is the City one. So is the Arsenal one. Yeah, they're absolutely stacked. Yeah.
But yeah, huge shout for Emma Hayes. Chelsea continuing to do amazingly well in the Women's Super League. And yeah, we will undoubtedly talk about that on Monday's show or on Righty's House next week. Let's wrap. Before we do go, quick shout out to Naomi Osaka.
Yes.
Who's bought a stake in North Carolina Courage.
Love that. Love that.
Things we love to see. Anything else, Musa?
Nope. All good.
You all good?
All my hot takes are out. Been a lot of them today. Oh, goodness.
Oh, goodness. Don't forget, you can check us on Twitter at Stadio, on Instagram at Stadio Football. Musa will have a piece going up on The Ringer either this week or next week. So yep, check theringer.com/soccer. Don't forget, if you do listen on a podcast app that allows you to rate and review, please do so. It'd be really appreciated. And yeah, we hope everyone's staying safe, staying well, staying as happy and positive as can possibly be. We will do some non-podcast stuff soon. We'll either do an Instagram live or we'll do a Stadio sessions. We're overdue for both, so maybe we'll do both at some point. And we're playing out on Lamborghini from Severed Heads. Stay safe, everyone. Much love. Have a great weekend and we'll see you Monday.
Take care.